Congressman Mike Boss joining us this morning. Morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. Well, we're back in D.C. after doing the tour of the flood, all the southern part of the flood areas on Monday. Before we came back out here, working on budget stuff out here, we can touch a little bit on. But the flood issue is, you know, it's on everybody's mind in the district. Those people who don't live on the floodplain but live in a county that is, thank heaven there's a lot of people that are helping everybody lives in the floodplain. Everything is beginning to crest, or has already crested, and is moving down. But the thing is, the ground is so saturated, we get a little bit more rain, a little north of us, like you're talking about just in your weather forecast, and all of a sudden we're back in. Right now in Alexander County, you know, we're really worried about making sure to keep the Route 3 open and Route 146 then on over to the Cape Bridge, because with Chester closed, you know, you wipe and make it to where you can't get to the Cape Bridge. You're looking at the 57 crossing, or 55, and to over to 55, and then St. Louis, and there's nothing in between, and that's a pretty dangerous situation to have. And not only that, but what it does for commerce and just general travel.
Right. And,
so we're watching all this.
And talking to some of the same farmers that I'm sure you've talked to in the last few days, they're telling me about, you know, we're holding some of the water back from going into the Mississippi. And, you know,
exactly.
They were telling me that they need another 8, maybe as much as 12 foot of drop on the Mississippi River before they can release and take their gates up and start draining the water off their locations. While at the same time, they've been running pumps to try to not get overwhelmed, but they're, you know, and they said, look, while we're looking at that river level to see whether we can open our gates and let the water back into the Mississippi, because it's got to be lower than the level in our fields,
right,
the people upstream are doing the same thing.
Right, and it's just one thing that people need to realize is, though this is that did not reach 93 flood levels, the reality is, one, is it has been on the walls of these levees longer than we've ever had any saturation on these walls. So the question is, how are they going to hold? One reason why a lot of it didn't reach 93 levels is because up in the Missouri floodplain and the Illinois River floodplain, you had several levees actually over top as well as break, which relieved a lot of the pressure in that same way that the people holding stuff back. So that did not let the levels come up. We also have to watch, you know, we've got, if you go to the northern part of my district, we've got one pump station 3 in Alton that actually, because of age, a certain return pipe severed through just being wore out. When it did, it worked and blew out the footing underneath the pump station. If you've seen those big pump stations up there, we were able to use a system that had been put in place to block that. That was about 3 weeks ago. So that two pumps could continue to operate. But if you come further south, like we were yesterday or Monday, you know, we went to Prairie du Rocher. They're dealing with sand boils there that they had to actually break a barge through a whole wood line and bring in the rock to stop that sand boil from working on and breaking through on the levee there. All the sand boils are being watched very, very closely up and down the entire system. When we went, like I said, we went to Prairie du Rocher, we went to Columbia, we went to, then we went into Chester. Chester has a unique situation because of the flood. Remember, Chester doesn't have a levee system because they come to the bluff. But below the bluff, on the frontage road for the bypass route, is where their pump station is for their clean drinking water. That pump station has been underwater for like 4 months. And if something fails there's no clean drinking water. And on Monday, their actual sewage plant failed and broke and was actually pumping raw sewage into the Mississippi, which they were working with the EPA to try to figure out what they had to do there. All of this caused by the amount of time that the water's been up on top of them. And you just come right on down. Grand Tire's doing fairly well. Jackson County, because of the investment that was made into bringing the gates up and bringing the wells up and securing those, and most of them are done. They're able to hold. We're working real well with them. But then we go down to East Cape, and then we're dealing with the case of trying to keep the water off the roads just to keep people traveling. So, I mean, it is a full-time, and we're also trying to watch the money involved, because we're probably going to reach that point for national disaster. And we do, then that's when the national aid kicks in.
All right. I talked to the IEMA director, the general, last week. I talked to the director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture yesterday, John Sullivan, who I'm assuming, Mike, that you're working with involving this $19 billion in farm and disaster assistance and making sure our farmers along the Mississippi in your district get their fair share, because they are the double whammy for the ones who get the high ground and plant if they got it in the ground. They went on to soybeans, but we've got the tariff issue and the flooding issue. We've got we got a double whammy here.
And the thing is, one thing I'm glad we got passed 2 years ago was Rodney Davis carried the main bill. I was co-sponsor of the bill. And what we've realized is with the disasters and the multiple disasters around the nation that we could have with tornadoes and floods and things like that, they wouldn't reach the $26 million level. But that's why we reduced it to the $19 million level to qualify. So if we would in this case, we don't think we'd reach the 26, but we will reach the 19.
Right.
That will give that opportunity for help, and that's why we're monitoring so closely.
That should have been changed years ago when you live in an inherently rural area and do not have the density when it comes to infrastructure. It's harder to achieve those levels for emergency, and that's what Mike is talking about here. You know, I'm curious about something else. The Lynn Small Levy, this is the problem that won't go away, and nobody does anything about it. This is the one that is really, in from my standpoint, and I'm sure the people near it, is aggravating as hell, Mike.
Right. Let me explain to you what we have done, because this is something we've been working on through our office since it blew in the flood of 2015, and I always refer to it as the holiday flood that was no holiday for us. And when that blew, remember, the Lynn Small Levy was a levy system that was built to be a five-year levy. If you understand the hydraulics of the Lynn Small Levy, it was supposed to, where it actually blew, was the high side of the Lynn Small Levy. The original idea and the way it was set up and the way it worked for years and years was the river would come down and start into Dogtooth Bend, so it'd come up long straightaway. It would hit that levee, which was higher on that side. It would go 17 miles around the slow drop, well, the 12-foot drop of Dogtooth Bend. And then the backside was a lower level levee. So then the water would come over, but wouldn't come over with rushing force. And it would flood and backfill the area. That way you wouldn't lose the farmland. About every, you know, and it was a five-year levee. That being said, in that particular flood, it came so fast that it blew it out. The problem was, with the existing rules, the Army Corps could only do based on, they could not use, They could only use dollar. Well, when you're using economic stat rules, you could only use the land behind it, and if it's just farmland, it doesn't generate enough to justify under their existing rules. We tried to change that rule immediately in the next WERDA bill. We got the language over to the Senate. Somehow the language was removed from the Senate. We did not get that done then, so we came back 2 years later. We got the language, which we have got in there, that is in there now. And I believe what's happening is the Army Corps did not listen to what we said, because we have the money to put it back, but there has to be a matching fund.
Right.
Matching funds, we were very, very clear that it could be done in volunteer labor. In other words, if the communities down there and others around want to come in, use backhoes, use whatever, bring over rock, move sand, whatever they have to do, and that all counts towards the matching fund.
Didn't go for that,
well,
did they?
Actually, Army Corps is interpreting it, but even though we're having to show it, and we think we can win this argument fairly quickly.
Good.
But then the thing is, everybody that asked me about it during my time down there, look, we're going to continue to work on it because we've got to get it done, because for navigable purposes as well as economic purposes, but also, we can't change it until the water's off. The water's got to come down.
Right.
And I think what they've done is the riprap that they put in place, we know this for a fact, I don't have to even say that, the riprap that the Army Corps put in place to try to be the slowing factor in case we had a flood like this is all washed out. So there's nothing slowing it, and it's continuing to cut and rechange the course of the river. And if they rechange the course of that river, I've explained this three times with a map, in 5-minute speeches on the floor here in the House of Representatives, and explain to them that if that cuts across that 3-mile cut, instead of the 17 miles around and drops 12 feet, during a majority of the time, that will be non-navigable because it will be a rapid, and you cannot, we can't allow for the ability to, for stopping of commerce up and down that river. We
no.
Can't. And
no.
that will block it right in the middle of the United States.
That's the scariest thing I've heard right there. You just nailed it. Mike, some other issues want to hit here with this morning, and I'm curious about your opinion. This Illinois Capitol bill, right, $45 billion, and some people, Republicans, were saying in the legislature here, saying, wait a second, they're talking about a major Capitol bill in D.C. Of course, they had a figure there, and then, of course, they had that presidential, I'm not going to talk to you guys until these investigations stop, after they kind of come up with a sum, how to get the money. Should we have waited here in the state of Illinois until we saw a Capitol bill come out of the federal government before we started assisting with the Illinois?
Here's the concern I have, Tom, so you know this. What they did to generate money in the Capitol bill in the state of Illinois, one of the major things they did was they raised the motor fuel tax, okay? And we all understand that, but it's a high possibility that the revenue stream, one of the major revenue streams, no, the major revenue stream, will be a motor fuel tax or some other taxation on transportation, okay? If they do the number that has been talked about around here, they're talking about, you know, they understand they haven't raised the motor fuel tax since 2002. And the raise that they would be talking about is like 25 cents a gallon. Will you add that on to what Illinois does? What's that going to do to Illinois residents and their fuel and everything like that? It's going to, you know, that's a scary thought there. I understand why they move forward with a capital bill, but you know, without us moving forward, however, we move slower than they do, that's for sure,
right?
Especially with the type of games that are being played here. But here's the reality, too. When you take the $2 trillion number, which they came up with in that meeting, which none of us really know unless it was just, okay, what do you think we can do? Boom, $2 trillion. If you raise that motor fuel tax across the United States to 25 cents, by 25 cents, that only generates $400 million. Where are you going to come up with the $1.6 billion we need, or $1 trillion we need more? And the thing is, we weren't even able to start discussing that. And Tom, I'm going to tell you the frustration I'm feeling here. I'm on transportation infrastructure, which is going to be the majority of this is going to happen in that committee. But we have person after person after person and panel after panel after panel coming to subcommittees and full committee telling us we need the infrastructure bill. We all know we need the infrastructure bill. We're kind of beating a dead horse by just saying we need an infrastructure bill. What we really need to do is figure out where we're going to come up with the revenue stream to invest in that infrastructure, because the reality is that when you invest in infrastructure in this United States, the economy continues to grow. We can continue to compete on a worldwide market. It's better for not only the economy, but for the safety of the people and the ability of the people to feel secure in their existing jobs. So we've got to make the investment. The question is how to get the groups, the powers that be, to quit arguing and quit playing politics long enough to sit down and actually work together.
Which leads me to the next question, because officially with President Trump declaring a campaign is on in Florida last night, I don't know what to expect. I mean, I've got pretty cynical opinion of the productivity of the legislature over the next 2 years during a presidential election. For one thing, half the Democrats in the Senate are on the campaign trail for president. And now that's hyperbole, but I mean, there's so many candidates. But with this attitude that we've experienced for the past 2 years, which will be thrown into more of a fighting frenzy type of issue the next 2 years, my hope for productivity is not high.
Right. And there are those who are willing to work even through this process, even during this time. I'm one of them. Now, remember, there was and let me tell you that I want to explain this, because, you know, during my last campaign, my opponent and a few others says, well, why aren't you a member of the Problem Solvers? I'm not a member of the Problem Solvers because of their bylaws, and but I'm a good friend with them, and that's why as they come up with ideas, I will most probably be right in there supporting their ideas. But in their bylaws, which I tried to get removed, and they said no, but we just won't enforce it. And I said, no, I'm not going to go by that. But their bylaws says if 70% of the problem solvers in that conference agree, and it's a bipartisan conference, agree with a particular piece of language or legislation, then they all had to vote for it. Well, folks, if it's against the Illinois 12 and all of a sudden 70% of them agree with it, I'm still voting for the Illinois 12. So I couldn't, in good faith, join them as a member, but I will support a lot of their issues. And believe me, there's a lot of people here that want to work to try to figure out and get things done. But when the leaders on the Democrat side are so busy trying to make it to where Trump can't get a win, and it's more about power and the next election than it is about what we're supposed to be doing right now. And the sad thing is, usually you get a little bit of a lull between it, but Trump never had any lull because they were so busy resisting. And then when they took majority, they were so busy resisting that they didn't know how to work and govern. And that's the problem that's existing right now. Even when we're working this week and last week on the appropriation bills that are being considered. You know, there's supposed to be a 12 different appropriation bills out there, Tom. And the Speaker has now put them in large packages called omnibus bills, which we have used omnibus bills before, but she's going to put like five of those 12 together. And then they load it down with things that are good for reelect for maybe a particular person in their district so they can put the amendment in there. However, they're doing all this, and they've never sat down and actually decided what the budget cap is going to be, which is the first thing you always do when you work with the Senate and the House work together and the President. You come up with, okay, what is the level of spending we agree upon that we can actually generate?
Nancy Pelosi says she wants it to go up.
Well, that's great, but where are you coming from? Where's it coming from? I mean,
well, Joe Biden says he wants, the first thing he wants to do is get rid of the tax cut. So there's some of it. I mean, he literally says, first thing I want to do is get rid of the tax cut. Who runs on a platform like that? Hey, Mike, we're running out of time, but okay. I want to hit some of other things here quickly.
Okay,
and it's personal in nature because our listeners are texting me in my studio line this morning. Here's Vern from Marion saying, I want to apologize, but I'll be working when Mr. Bost is on. I want to express my sympathy for the loss of his mother. He goes on to say about how he feels he can always count on you. We've received several other messages this morning. Another saying, please make sure that you give Mike Bost proper condolences for the loss of his mom, Peggy, who just passed away. The viewing was last Friday. There was a huge turnout of well-wishers. These are just two of many who have been texting our studios this morning on the loss of your mother, Mike.
Let me first off say thanks to everyone for their condolences. I have been blessed. I've been blessed beyond measure. But let me tell you that she passed, she had 24-hour care in the home, also with my dad. My dad is still alive, and he has 24-hour care in the home. She passed 2 days. One, she passed in her sleep. Two, she passed 2 days before her 86th birthday. She passed 1 month to the day from her 70th wedding anniversary. She has four children who are strong Christians who believe in Jesus Christ and are working actively in their community, love their children and grandchildren, and she has tremendous amount of grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and she was tired of a hospital bed in her home, she was tired of the oxygen in her house, and she was tired of being surrounded 24 hours a day by nurses, and she said she was ready. And so, you know, all we can do is ask for a blessed life like that. I was blessed. I miss her already. There's times I reach out to call her and realize there's not going to be an answer. But, Tom, the people have been great with the outpouring of love and friendship. And, you know, we celebrate her life.
Right.
And there are so many people that suffer so many greater losses in the fact that they go before early in their lives or they drag out with disease and all of those things. But I've been blessed, right. And I thank you for them. I thank them and everyone else for their reaching out and their friendship and their love.